seconds to go. Comes in to Tucker. Ewing sets a screen. The shot is off. Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Strick and Roll. This is episode 3. I am joined today by a first-time guest, I believe on any of our pods. It is Simon. He runs the Shot Quality account on Twitter. Simon, what's going on?
Not much. Yeah. The Shot Quality account, I get a lot of hate whenever I post a score that I think I was compared, actually, to the Democratic reaction of the 2016 election. You saw that? Yeah, after I posted the Knicks score, the Knicks expected score. it's funny to be introduced based off my Twitter.
Before we get started, I have to make the announcement of all announcements, the one I make every single episode now. We at the Strickland have a Patreon now. You can find it at patreon.com/thestrickland or on our homepage at thestrick.land. Pod Strickland on Mondays will remain free. Draft Strickland is free. Alex, Zach, and Matt's mail.bag week is free. And we will likely be adding another podcast to the lineup, which will also be free moving forward. Things that are changing: Pod Strickland on Friday with me and Prez, and my mailbag with Jeremy and Drew will be on the $6 tier and above. My solo pod will be on the $9 tier, but the reason to actually subscribe to that tier is not to hear more of me ranting and raving. It is for exclusive weekly articles from Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best writers around in the Knicksverse. If you want even more access to us, you can join the $15, $30, $50, or $100 tiers, which include many benefits ranging from watch parties, sitting in on pod recordings, guest appearances on podcasts, and even hosting a podcast yourself, where you can tell me I am a jackass. No matter what, if you are a Patreon or not, your support is appreciated. None of this would be possible without you. And we're going to start talking about the Knicks now.
I wanted to have you on just because there's a lot going on with the Knicks right now. They're 7-4, but it doesn't feel like everybody is. They're 7-4. I think that they've gotten off to a pretty decent start. I think that it's hard to square that away with the feeling that they could be even better. And you know, some of that is the defense has clearly slipped. But I think this is obviously your kind of expertise, but like, I feel like some of these games are just, I hate to boil it down to this too, but it's like, you know, make or miss league. And I feel like some of these games are just, you know, I mean, you just get unlucky sometimes. And like, sure, there's stuff like, you know, we saw with Cleveland. You know, is there something to the idea of like, well, if guys are constantly getting into a rhythm against you, maybe that's something, says something about your defense and it's not just luck. But like, I don't really know what to make of it when Ricky Rubio is literally playing like Steph. But I guess, like, what are your thoughts? I mean, is there any way, like, I guess here's a better way to start this is, like, when you're measuring shot quality, is that just based on shot location and, you know, like, how is that being measured, I guess?
Absolutely, yeah. It's based off the most important part of the calculation. It's based off the individual player's shot-making ability. So when Chris Paul takes an elbow jumper, it's a really good shot. When Alfred Payton takes an elbow jumper, not a good shot. When Frankie Smoke takes an elbow jumper, that's a 100% shot on the shot quality album every single time. So all the numbers are individualized depending on the player's effectiveness on that shot type. So it's really incorporating the shot selection and the shot making ability of the player. It's like the two parts of the calculation.
Okay. So, but So there, but there's it. Does it calculate in, like, obviously we know there's a difference between, you know, generally speaking, catch and shoot shots are better than pull up shots. So is that baked into this also?
Absolutely. So, like, it's based off the historic performance on that player taking that shot. So, for example, the Knicks this season are basically expected to shoot 43% actually on catch and shoot three so far this year, just based off who's taking it, how open they've been. And on off the dribble threes as a team, they're expected to shoot, this is 1.07 is 35% basically on off the dribble threes. And I was actually looking at this stat before the game, before we started talking. They're third in frequency of off the dribble 3-point shots and 24th in catch and shoot 3-point frequency. So I think that's kind of an interesting discrepancy, because people are talking about how the Knicks are taking so many more threes, but in reality, it's about the threes they're taking. I mean, we have great off the dribble 3-point shooters like Fournier, Randall's pretty solid. RJ's obviously improving. But when you're not getting that open catch and shoot three as much as like the top teams are, like the Jazz, that's going to hurt the shot quality. But obviously, if you're hitting a lot of, if you're great shooters taking off triple threes, it'll be well accounted for, obviously.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty interesting because, you know, I mean, Tibbs has talked about this a bunch, but, and I think this is also where some of the frustration comes in, because there are a lot of possessions where you watch it and you're like, that's an okay shot. Could you have gotten a better shot? It feels like there's a lot of possessions where the Knicks could do more to kind of get a better shot. I thought in the last game against Philly, there were a few instances where, especially in the fourth quarter, it felt like RJ had decent looks from three, but if he had made one more pass, it probably would have been a great look for like Kemba or whoever it was, wide open on the perimeter. And this is obviously not just like an RJ problem, but I think it's a problem. Like all these guys, right? You know, Kemba, Fournier, RJ, Randall, in that starting lineup, these are all guys who like are shot makers, right? Essentially, like these are guys who are in their own heads, like in their mentality. I think they view themselves first and foremost as scorers. And that's okay, but like it means that there will be growing pains because you have to find that balance. And I think Kemba is actually probably the guy who struggled with it the most. Just because it seems like he's like aware that he has to make a sacrifice, but his way of doing it has just been to like give the ball to Julius and then clear out to the side and like not actually doing things. And it also feels like he's, when he is looking to score, it's like he's almost like only looking to get the pull up three. And then it's, you know, he very rarely is comfortable pulling up inside the arc now, it seems. And he is very, very infrequently getting to the rim. I don't know if that's stuff that you measure, but like, I mean, Does that show up in your numbers at all, these kind of things, or is that, you know, not so much?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. I mean, what I find so fascinating about the Knicks and really the ball handlers, like you just mentioned, they're all shot makers, and they want to be. They have the mentality of being a shot maker. So the two parts of the Knicks' offensive scheme that's going to suffer due to that is obviously there's going to be a good amount of isolation, so they're eighth in ISOs. And then there's going to be less catch and shoot threes, which I brought up. And there's going to be less cutting opportunities. So, like, cuts are usually, like, assisted plays.
Right.
And just because of the offensive scheme where, like, okay, Julius, I mean, thank God he's not doing it as much this year. Like, that step back, deep, long, too. Obviously, it was a decent shot. And, like, in the Hawks series, obviously, that kind of got exposed a little bit when there would be that soft double with Clint. But whatever. Yeah, just, like, finding ways to get more assisted shots, I think I feel like it's got to be like a change to the offensive scheme. Like I do love the change and the evolution from last year to this year. It's kind of crazy how big of a jump they've really made in 3-point attempt rate. But it's really about the type of threes they're getting is what I think is even more important than just taking a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, Tibbs just talked about that.
He talks about that all the time. Yeah, he does talk about that.
He always talks about that. You know, you want to get good threes, not, you know, you want to get good threes or great threes. You don't want to just take X amount of threes and that be that, you know, have that be it. I wonder, you know, some of it is kind of interesting. Like, by your numbers, are the Knicks, are they underperforming from three, like percentage-wise? Or, yes. And yes. Also, like, are they getting a bit unlucky defensively from in terms of opponent shooting from three?
No. So offensively, they're expected to shoot 3% better than they are right now. So they're shooting 37% from three currently, and they're expected to be shooting 40% as a team based off how open the shots are, who's taking it. So that's good. So obviously there's some positive regression in that sense. Also on mid-range, they don't take a crazy amount of mid-range, but they're currently shooting 37% on mid-range, and based off the quality of shots and who's taking them, they're supposed to be shooting 42. So that's a little bit good positive regression. However, on the opposite end, like we saw a little bit last year, the Knicks' three-point defense right now is 36%. Like a defensive three-point percentage, and teams right now are expected to shoot 39. So that is a 3% difference. I guess it equalizes the offensive 3% difference. So in summary, they're not. I think they're playing right as they should perform through the 11-game stand, and it's not. And it's so fascinating because when you take this many threes, there's just going to be so much volatility and variability in how much you score and how different the shot quality looks to the actual score. Just because you could have those games where you shoot 10%, 15% from three. But overall, from a team standpoint, I think they're literally right where they should be from a shot quality to an actual record standpoint.
Yeah, it's funny. Just like, you know, I don't have the numbers that you have. So this is just my kind of, you know, looking at it more on a broad scale. But the Knicks are, what, fourth, I think, in offensive rating right now in the NBA. I'll double check that. But it's kind of funny because even though they have scored very well overall, like, I mean, you look at the individual production and, you know, like, really, there's probably more upside here than even, like, their current standing suggests. Like, I mean, you would think, okay, they're fourth in the NBA. How much better can they actually get on offense? I think the answer is, like, maybe quite a bit, because if you look at it, like, Julius still hasn't really, like, it's kind of crazy to look at his numbers and be like, he hasn't really, like, found a consistent rhythm. But, like, yeah, I mean, I know he's putting up 22 and 11 or whatever, but, like, it does feel like it's been a little bit disjointed. Kemba's obviously shot great from three. I would say the volume hasn't really been that impressive. So that's something. But, like, Fournier is not shooting at the level, his overall efficiency isn't at the levels that he's been at over the last few years. RJ is at 35% from three. Maybe that's, you know, like, I know that there's always a debate about how good of a shooter is he really. I think that he's probably closer to like 37-38.
Yep, I totally agree. I think that's his expected 3-point percentage, is actually 37-38 on like the algorithm.
So like, you know, maybe he's not going to shoot the 40. Oh, close to 41% he shot last year. But 37-38%, really good for a player like him. You know, I think, like, Quickly has been, you know, he hasn't made a shot. Like, he's just kind of getting into some kind of three-point rhythm the last few games. But he's still way below what you would expect. Obi has been ice cold. I think he's going to shoot it better as the season goes on. And, yeah, like, I kind of, like, look at this team and really, like, I don't know. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, I mean, other than Kemba and Rose, is there anybody that's been like, you know, super on it from three? And it doesn't really feel like it, which is crazy because, like I said, they're fourth. They're tied for third, essentially, in offensive rating. Both them and Miami have a 112.6 offensive rating, according to Basketball Reference. Funny enough, the Sixers, 114.9, leading the league, and Utah at 113.5 in second. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, really interesting to think about it because, like I said, like, I don't even think that they've had some, like, crazy outlier shooting. And in a lot of ways, I think that they're probably due to have, like, a big three-point shooting game soon. It seems like it's been, I don't even know the last game where you'd be like, oh, yeah, they just totally went off from three. It feels like it's been a little bit. You know, this is the thing with, like, three-point shooting teams. If you up the volume, you're going to have stretches like that where the shot isn't going. And, like, obviously we know if you're not making threes, it bleeds into – it impacts other areas of your team's performance, right? Defensively, transition defense, all these kind of things. So, Yeah, I don't know. I guess just like, what are your thoughts on that? Because to me, it still feels like there's a lot of room for progression offensively, which is kind of stunning to say.
Well, this is something that a friend of mine actually brought up and wanted me to talk to you about on this podcast. So the trade-off between Evan Fournier and Reggie Bullock. So it's so obvious that Fournier is a better overall player. But I think there could be an argument made that Reggie Bullock in the regular season might be more valuable than Evan Fournier in the regular season. I think 100% in the playoffs, Fournier, because he's a shot creator. You can't put Trae Young on Evan Fournier. So in the playoffs, it's a totally different story. But basically, Reggie Bullock was told to stay in there, hit, catch, and shoot threes, and he would nail it at a great rate, and play lockdown defense. And that was kind of exactly what the Knicks needed, like an off-ball guy exactly like that, just to literally take spot up open threes. Obviously, Fournier can do that as well, but the trade-off, I think Bullock is definitely a significantly better defender. So what do you think about that almost being like, even though Fournier is such a better player, I think right now in the regular season, that might be more. Do you think that's even slightly of a net negative or not at all?
I think this is like, I think this is an issue that's kind of raising its head, and a lot of it has to do with, like, let's be honest, Kemba Walker has been bad. And the thing is, you know, even if you expected the defense to regress, you expected more dynamic scoring from the backcourt would offset that. I also would say that to some degree, I think the defense, I wouldn't say they're getting I would say they're not getting unlucky on defense, but I do think last year they got a bit lucky at the start of the season, which was obviously a source of much discussion at the time with teams missing open threes. I mean, I looked it up the other day. The Knicks are basically giving up, through 10 games, they had given up 219, I think, wide open threes through 10 games. Not a good number. Last year, through 10 games, they'd given up 222. But the difference is teams were weirdly shooting 33.3% against them from three on those wide open shots, whereas this year they were shooting 41%, which is a massive difference. Here's the thing. We'll see what happens with Kemba. He deserves a little bit more time. He's making an adjustment. He talked about it after the Philly game. But if he's not going to be an active participant offensively, if he's not going to look to attack, to create advantages, to be the guy, I mean, we don't need him to be all-star Kemba Walker, but he needs to be a guy who's looking to attack. And he's just been really way too passive at times. He's walking the ball up the floor, so we're not really getting into transition stuff very often. He's been bad. And what that does is it also puts a focus on the issues that Fournier has defensively, where he's I tend to think he's actually like a pretty decent team defender, but he's not the quickest. He's not as quick as Reggie, probably, defensively. I think he's a little bit less consistent in terms of making the right rotations and effort. But it's really becoming more of a glaring issue because you're not getting anything out of Kemba. And I would say this, I think something to consider is, in hindsight, whether the Knicks would have been better off not signing a point guard and just playing IQ at point. Because I think one of the primary issues that starting lineup has defensively isn't so much the Fournier stuff. It's the point of attack defense hasn't really been good. And I don't think that's specific to Kemba. There's been a drop. Like, Mitch isn't back at his level. I think there's also been like a bit of sloppiness in terms of, you know, guys aren't on a string defensively right now. So it kind of highlights how much of a liability at times Kemba has been.
Can you actually explain this to me? Because I don't get this. I was just looking at the numbers on the site. Like, last year, the Knicks were fourth in quality of shots allowed around the rim. So, like, they defended really well. And that was with Mitch being out most of the year. Mitch, like, people were talking about him being, like, the MVP of the team. Now, this year so far, in terms of the quality of shots allowed at the rim, they're 15th on defense.
So, I'm assuming some of this would also be related to the fact that they've been pretty bad in terms of defensive rebounding. They're 20th right now in the league in defensive rebound percentage. I don't know what they were last year. I can probably look that up. But 20th is not good. And if you look at it, a lot of these rebounds are giving up. I mean, the Cleveland game, you saw it. It was a lot of like desperate, you know, Mitch or Noel or whoever trying to block the driver, giving up uncontested offensive rebounds to Jared Allen or Evan Mobley or whoever. Prez had a tweet the other day where he highlighted how poor Julius Randle's box out rate has been this year. That's been another problem. I think he looked a lot sharper in that aspect against Philly. The team in general looked a lot sharper, but these are not things you can just do. Like, you have to be consistent with it, and the Knicks have not been consistent with it. Last year, the Knicks were eighth, by the way, in defensive rebound percentage. They were at 78.6. I know that seems insignificant, but like offensive rebounds often lead to the highest quality shots. Yep, 100%. So, yeah,
100%. So that probably is the difference, actually.
Yeah.
And do you think that's because of, is Nerlens Noel a better defensive rebounder than Mitch?
No. I truly think some of this is Mitch is a step slow. He's working his way back.
Yep.
You can see that visibly. There are times he looks great, and then there are stretches where he looks like he's about to collapse on the floor and he can't even move. Randle, I think he's really struggling to find, like, some of his offensive struggles. I think he's let that impact his effort and energy doing some of the stuff that made him so impactful last year defensively, in terms of rotations, in terms of boxing out, stuff like that. So I think that's something that he was pretty open about it after that Cleveland game, that he needed to bring better energy. He needs to be set a better tone. He did that against Philly. He has to keep doing that. I think, and this is where I was going with it, like, quickly right now, because there's been a bit of a drop off on the back end defensively, he might represent, I mean, not much. He is the Knicks' best point of attack defender on the roster. He consistently fights over screens. I think his defense is pretty seriously leveled up this year. I know that the benches on off stuff is ridiculous. Like, literally all of them have like crazy on off splits. But to me, quickly is a big reason why they've been really, really effective defensively with those bench units.
I never thought of him as like a defender, like a pest. Like, I obviously know he's like super quick, just on the offensive end, like getting guys defender. But I didn't even like really, like, I thought he was a neutral defender. I didn't think he would be our best defender. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought I thought last year he was underrated defensively. It's really weird. Like, his reputation as a prospect coming into the NBA, like, if you look at the stuff at Kentucky, most of it has him as like, yeah, he's a good defender. He's a really good team defender. All that stuff says it. And I don't know why it happened, but it felt like last year he got labeled as some kind of defensive liability just because there would be times where like he'd get switched on. Like, I mean, he played the two, right? Like, he plays the two pretty often. So there are nights where he's just giving up size. And like, sure, there are times that a wing can bully him and take him down low. But like, all things considered, it doesn't happen that often. And it's because he's got long arms. He's got a strong lower body. His legs, if you look at him, he's very sculpted, super thick. So I just think that, like, he's really underrated defensively. And to your point about Fournier, I think, like, you know, I asked this question on the mailbag. I don't know if they answered it, but I did ask it. In hindsight, if the Knicks – because I do think that Grimes is ready to play right now, and I think Tibbs likes him, but he can't. He won't play him right now, right? Because he's got his guy. Like, he's got the 10 guys that he expected to play coming into the season.
He doesn't change. He's not very malleable when it comes to lineups.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of get it. Like, he can't punt on Kemba yet. You know, you can't do that. Fournier got a contract. They're going to play him. Burks got a contract. He likes him.
The Burks was the one. I think they signed him. Did they sign him before they got Kemba? Yeah. That was the one that. That one bothered me a little bit. Like, he was really good last year, and we needed like that shot creator there. But he's so, like, he's just a worse version of Fournier.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing with Burks is, like, it was obviously pretty important to them to get specific type of contracts. They wanted guys to agree to these 2-year deals, right?
Yeah.
And I think if it was just all things equal, I'm almost positive Bullock would have returned over Burks, but like, it wasn't. Bullock got 3 years guaranteed. Burks took the 2+1. The other thing, I think it's hard where, you know, they did signed Fournier, they clearly wanted that. It's hard to be like, yeah, we want you back, but also you're going to come off the bench now. And we're going to replace you in the starting lineup with Fournier. Like, I know people, like, these guys are human beings. Like, that, that's something that, that could be very awkward in the locker room. And I get why they, you know, why maybe that was a motive, or not a motivation, but a contributing factor for why they chose not to bring Bullock back. But what I will say is this, like, I think Grimes, I know he's barely played. I've been very, very impressed with him going back to summer league defensively. Like, I buy the shot too. I just think the shot, he's going to shoot. But defensively for me,
it is beautiful.
He's like, I mean, I know there are a lot of younger Knicks fans out there, but if you never saw Allen Houston shoot, just watch Quentin Grimes. He's got that kind of shot. But his defense is awesome. And again, I just, this is hindsight. So it's very hard. It's easy for me to sit here now and say this, but like, it would be interesting to see if you gave them true, if you gave Leon Rose and Worldwide West and all these, you know, the front up Brock Oller, if you gave them truth serum, if in hindsight they would like to go back, not sign Kemba, and just roll with IQ, Rose, and, you know, have, you have Deuce obviously there, and then slot Grimes, like you would start IQ and then just put Grimes in the rotation for where IQ is currently. It'd be very interesting to see. I strongly suspect the Knicks would end up being a much more solid defense if they did that. I don't even think they would take a huge hit offensively. Maybe that changes because Kemba really gets it together. But Kemba hasn't yet. And that's the entire thing. We have to wait and see. Because if Kemba does get it together, then these, the issue you initially brought up with Fournier, like, I don't think that's as much of an issue then. Just because the offense will be so good that we'll be like, okay, well, we can live with a defensive drop-off. And I do think the Knicks will end up being closer to the top 10 defensively than the 23rd they're currently sitting in. Maybe that's just me being a homer, but like, I tend to feel, I feel like Tibbs teams tend to pick up and improve gradually as the season goes on. I went through and looked up like all of his teams that he's coached over the years. And that's like a trend that played out over a lot of those teams. So something to keep, you know, track of. But yeah, I would be very, very interested to see what, you know, if that is something that in hindsight they would like to do. And I will say this, if IQ keeps playing at this level and he, you know, he gets back to making shots as he's been in the last few games, I think the passing's improved. I think his ball handling's improved, even if the numbers aren't, you know, eye-catching at this moment. It would be very interesting to see what he could do with, you know, an actual chance getting consistent lead guard minutes on his team.